room.
That's some Blog Talk Radio. I guess we
don't
get the
Talk Radio.
Oh, yeah. All right, folks. This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Yo, it's the Tornado, Tony Pentacal.
And I'm sure Tom will be popping on anytime. We got a pretty wild show for tonight. We had a short show last week, so we didn't really get an opportunity to do our TNT segment that we planned for last week. We're going to try to get to it tonight. We had a really busy second hour. We got MMA fighter Tommy Montoya. He's under the brand of Dog Boxer. And we got a big surprise return guest who was a former host. We got Hell Holly coming on at 9:15. She introduced us to Tommy Montoya. So we're going to have a really...
It's got to be about a year.
Yeah, it's going to be a really crowded 9 o'clock hour. So
Holly will be so proud when I tell her I went to the one bar last week. They had the UFC fights on, and I actually, for 30 seconds, actually looked at the fights instead of looking at my waitress.
There you go. That's,
yeah,
it's definitely a good card to watch for boxing, anyway.
Yeah, there wasn't anything boxing on. A group of us got together. It's five of the six members of my friend Groom's Party. You know, the groom was there. We haven't decided who the best man is yet, so the likely best man was not there, but the other four of us were. Just, confirming what we're going to the bachelor party in 2 weeks. I mean, I got everything booked, but we got to figure out what time we're meeting, what time we're going to get, who's paying for what, who's credit cards, all that bullshit. So we all met together and, went to this place called the Tilted Kilt. I've been going to Tilted Kilt for a couple of years when I go to Clearwater for to see the Phillies, right around the corner from my hotel. It's like a Scottish Shooters. But now they opened one up about 30 minutes from where I live. So, we go there and ogle the cute little girls in the little kilt and knee-high socks and get some food. And the fights are free. So you figure you go over there and you're getting dinner, getting some drinks and watching a fight for free, basically.
Awesome.
And they make money because you figure our tab for five guys was like $140 because we all got food and we all had drinks.
Cool. Yeah, it was actually one of those things where they probably made more money off the pay-per-view than they did off the gate. The gate was really bad there again. It's the second time in a few months here that they've had a really bad gate. But basically, Dana White chalked it up to the shootings out there in Colorado and just the fires, the wildfires everywhere, and people were placed or not a lot of money to spend to go out and watch a show.
How did they release how the pay-per-view number said?
No, not yet. As far as I know, I haven't seen them anyway. But
The reason I ask that, Rich, is because, the live gate, that's kind of, hit or miss. And you can say, maybe it's because of the shootings out there or because of the wildfires. There's no exact science to it. When you come up to a situation where I want to know the pay-per-view numbers, if the pay-per-view numbers are poor, is that potentially because of a situation whether they are trying to, run too many pay-per-view shows. As my one friend Mike was saying, basically we started going to this Tilted Kilt. We went for the first show there that we went to see a UFC fight was sometime in June. And this was about maybe our fourth or fifth time we've been there for a fight card. One of them was a Strikeforce show. I don't remember exactly, but you figure every 2 weeks there's a pay-per-view card. Say they're $50 a pop. That's $100 a month if you're ordering every one of them.
Right.
And right now with the economy being down and everything, that's you're not really winning people over by dipping into their pockets two times a month.
Yeah, but, you know, if they put the right people in the cards, people will always buy.
Oh, you're absolutely, and you're 100% right about it. Yeah, we went to the, I was joking with my friend Mike. I know we've hit at least three UFC pay-per-views there. I think, like I said, one of them I think was the Strikeforce show, which may have been the fourth show we went to. But I know we went, the first one we went to, and I'm sorry, I cannot remember who fought on the card. That was in earlier mid-June. The second one we went to was the Chael Sonnen and Anderson Silva fight, and then the third one we went to was this one this past weekend. So the first time we went there, you know, we were trying to get a table. There was, you know, they didn't take us upstairs, but there was one table open, and it was three of us that went, and we got a table almost immediately. We sat down, we had dinner, we watched the fights. The second time we went there, and it was a medium crowd. You know, you could move around. It wasn't, you know, where you couldn't move. The second time we went there was for the Chael Sonnen and Anderson Silva fight. We got there, it was three of us again. We could not get a table. Place was packed. And basically what they had was they had a long bar with like a meal, like kind of like a divider in it. So you could sit people on both sides of it, and that way it was almost like it was like a long table, and you know people could get food, they could get drinks. That's where we got sat at the second time, and then the third time we went, you know, it was five of us that went. There were tables up, there were tables downstairs that we could have had, but they had to bring us upstairs because we needed a six-person table. That's the way I've been gauging the popularity of some of these cards is by the crowd at the film.
Before we get into talking about the individual fights, I just want to mention Tom's here.
I'm here.
Hello, Tom.
Hey, Tom.
Oh, no. Probably surprised that we're on time tonight. But we actually had a little controversy after UFC 150. Kind of went over the heads of a lot of the MMA guys. It involves boxing, so it's just a good combat sports like in general. Dana White went out and said about the Nike deal that John Jones signed recently. We don't know the numbers yet, but they signed a big blockbuster deal with Nike. And Dana White went out in the press scrum after the fights and said that the Manny Pacquiao line by Nike is being shut down and the John Jones line is starting up. And it was a complete lie. He told it like it was the truth. The only qualifying remark he made was at one point he said, I think that's what they're going to do. But you know, before that he said, yeah, they did. They did shut that down, like he believed it. So I don't know whether he did it on purpose. It doesn't sound like it. But we know Manny Pacquiao likes to sue people for defamation. So I don't know. I guess the Nike... and it's out there, printed stories saying this whole thing was a real story, that you know, Manny Pacquiao's whole clothing line got shut down just so they could sign John Jones. And, you know, the day, you know, actually Manny Pacquiao's people had to come out and kill that rumor. But it goes to show you how these MMA kids do their fact-checking. They don't.
Well, I guess what's his attitude? Talk first and ask questions later, huh? Jeez.
Right.
I mean, you know, when the whole world's listening, you know, when so many people in this business are listening to you, you know you're going to be second-guessed. There's going to be fact-checking. Oh, well.
Okay, we had a little breakdown there. I had to reset my whole computer because I opened a single window. Go figure. But we're back now. I was trying to open the card for Strikeforce this weekend, Ronda Rousey versus Sarah Kaufman. Getting a little ahead of myself, even though we were talking about UFC 150. I'll get Tom back on in a minute here. But what I was saying was, I thought that the main event was kind of like we predicted. Frankie Edgar and Benson Henderson played it out just like we thought, with Edgar just not being able to do anything completely new. Just kind of same old style, a little bit different as far as he kind of did some punching and running. But other than that, I thought it was kind of same old this time. Except for I thought a lot more people thought Frankie won this fight, which I don't understand. How did you see it, Tom?
Well, it still gets back to, and I hate these cliches, but it still gets back to that. If it's that close, you've got to beat the champ. And you could make a case either way, but I think it was the kind of fight that was so close that the loser didn't have anything to complain about. And I mean, the way I've seen it. So
right.
I'm not overly surprised. And they were interviewing Dana afterwards and asked about, do you think Edgar should go to 145? And he said, well, I can't make the kid do anything, whatever. I mean, he's got, because Dana kind of gave the impression that he thought Edgar had pulled it out in that last round. I don't know if you've seen any or read anything about that, but he's saying, well, hey, it was 2-2. He says, all I'm going to say is I had it even going into the last round, but the judges said Henderson won, and that's the way it is. So I found that kind of interesting, but... really, that's it's very close, but I'll still fall back on that cliche that you've got to take it to the champ and win it decisively. And there we are.
Right. Well, that was a good fight either way. I thought the co-main event was pretty exciting there with Cerrone and Ugarte. We kind of called that one. We basically
right.
also just
right.
went to the decision of the Ugarte. Cerrone could not come out in the first round, he was going to win. So that was spot on by us.
I don't want to get a swollen head, but I think this time we had some holes in one on this one. Yeah,
yeah, live up to the psychic Tom nickname. We had Jake Shields versus Ed Herman, and I kind of got a chuckle when Dana White was answering questions about this fight, and he goes, it was a Jake Shields fight. What do you expect?
that was worth the price of the interview. Yeah, I would have to ask you, what in the world was your strategy? I mean, you're not going to wall-install a guy like Jake Shields. You're not going to outlay him for him, or you're not going to out-wall-install him. Go with play to your strengths. I don't understand what he was trying. I mean, and I haven't read any big interviews from him afterwards. I don't know if you guys have, but I just don't get it. I mean, it's that old cliche, why play to your opponent's strength? And I think that's what it did. It was just the wrong strategy for him.
And we had Yushin Okami beat Buddy Roberts by TKO in the second round. It was a halfway decent fight anyway. Some reason, nothing's jumping out at me about that one to even describe it. I know I saw it, but it's like one of those things. It wasn't very memorable to me. But Buddy Roberts took the loss. Yushin Okami, he's like one of those rare guys. Those Japanese guys seem to be doing horribly in the UFC, but he's doing all right. We had Max Holloway beat Justin Lawrence by TKO, also in the second round, with 10 seconds left to go. 11 seconds to be technical. The big one that I remember was Dennis Bermudez from The Ultimate Fighter taking on Tommy Haydon. And the only time I've ever seen anybody use a standing guillotine, he was a pretty big guy. He's like 185. I had a fight that I saw live. Actually, John Jones was on the same card before he was in the UFC. And it was at Foxwoods, Connecticut. Yeah, and this kid was pretty jacked up, but he was a big guy, and he picked the guy up right off his legs almost to get the choke in. But Bermudez is much shorter than this opponent that he faced this weekend, and Tommy Haydon was like 6'1" or something, I thought, if I remember the tale of the tape correctly, and Bermudez got to be 5 foot something, and he would manage to get him when he was hunched over and put the headlock around his head and then just kind of leaned back and arched his back perfectly and choked him out. I mean, I'd never seen a shorter guy manage that against a taller guy like that.
Yeah, that was just a very dominating performance with Bermudez. I mean, it just seems like he just took charge from square one, and I don't know if I was in the corner eight and what I would have told him in the first round. I mean, it just seemed like he was being dominated everywhere. I mean, on the ground, the feet, and great job for Bermudez.
Right, and they call it a guillotine choke on the score sheet here, but they should note that it's a standing guillotine. It's a lot different.
Now that is guillotine or guillotine. How do you pronounce that? I guess both ways are correct.
Yeah, I always say guillotine because that's the French pronunciation, and supposedly my ancestors are French, so. I like to observe the culture properly. But,
that sounds better. Guillotine sounds so much better.
Yeah. But I do hear a lot of... Actually, I saw they had an episode on USA this week of Royal Pains where they had an MMA fighter on the show, and they were watching his fight on TV, and they called it a guillotine shot. But that's kind of interesting. Anyway, getting back to the UFC 150 card, we had a couple... four preliminary fights. I didn't see any of them. But Michael Kuiper won by TKO, also in the second round. A lot of second round TKOs in this card over Jared Hammond. And I heard Jared Hammond got injured so badly with his hamstring that the muscle pulled away from the bone. And Dana White said he saw it. It looked pretty bad the night of the fight. You can't imagine what it looked like the next day.
Yeah, well, Jared gave everything in the world. I mean, and I guess his style in the past had been one of these guys like a rock'em sock'em robot, in boxing, the old cliche, I block with my face, one of those guys, like a face fighter, and he was just absorbing one. Jared Hammond? Yeah,
there's something wrong with doing that? I know.
I guess it depends on how what kind of a chin you've got. Is the other guy going to tire out? But this Kuiper hit him with a beautiful roundhouse right on the side of the knee. Nothing illegal. I mean, there was nothing wrong with it, but you could just see the whole tone of the fight change. And Hammond was a right-handed fighter, so this was on his lead leg, and he just couldn't plant himself. And when the first round ended, you could just see him wincing as he's staggering back to his corner. And I felt so bad for the guy because he's fighting in front of his hometown. And, I mean, not that you ever want to lose, but, I mean, this had to be special. And, his corner had to be asking him, okay, can you go on? And the guy just had all the courage in the planet and went out for the second round, and he couldn't even put weight on his foot. And he was taken down for, Kuiper should have just kept it on the feet, but he took him down, and it looked like he was going to finish him. And somehow Hammond got up again and just really went out guns blazing and then tried to stand and, made a last stand of it, but to no avail. I mean, they finally had to stop it. And he earned my respect, but,
He got a bonus, too, according to Dana White. He got a nice locker room bonus.
Mm-hmm.
So off the books, I bet, but probably a good amount of money, seeing as he's probably going to be out for a while.
Yeah.
We also had Eric Perez beat Ken Stone by a first round knockout, just 17 seconds in. That was a fast fight. Bunches knockouts. Then we had Chico Camus beat Dustin Tague by unanimous decision. And Nick Bacarny-Lentz won over Yaiji Mitsuoka by first round TKO.
In that fight, Nick Lentz looked just dynamic. I mean, I think he's at the right weight division, And he could not have looked better. So I hope that we'll be seeing him on the main draw here coming up.
Yeah, and then we have, of course, we got to talk about the Strikeforce card a little later, but I want to give Tony a chance to let us know if you saw any boxing over the weekend. I know I did catch a little of the Friday night fights.
Yeah, there really wasn't anything on Saturday. The Friday night fight started a little bit late for my taste. I was able to catch the first fight, but I was already starting to get heavy-eyed by that point. I was up pretty early on Friday. I had some errands to run and worked out pretty hard that day. So really with the main part of the card coming on, the eyes betrayed me, and I was out before the main event.
Well, we did have the Olympics wrapped up, but we had one gold medal winner, a female named Clarissa Shields from Flint, Michigan. So,
did you see highlights of her fight against the Russian girl?
I did. She was all energy.
I actually kind of felt bad for the girl she was fighting. So this girl, obviously, is 32 years old. She's, experienced. And it looked like she was fighting a girl that was playing on fast forward. Clarissa was... What the great thing about Clarissa was she did not fight in that what has become a very boring Olympic style. Basically, as my one colleague in the fight right world, as I call him, he called basically Olympic boxing fencing with gloves.
Yeah.
And she did not fight like that. She did not fight where tap, 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 run, run, run. She was literally a super ball. She bounced in, she bounced out. She was throwing 100 punches a minute. She actually reminded me of 1976 watching the old videos of Sugar Ray Leonard.
Wow.
She really did. She really did, yes. Because I remember, watching it. I wasn't born at the time. I was born a few months later when Ray Leonard won those Olympics in 76. And I just remember watching highlights of it. And he was, like I said, the guy he was fighting. Older, more experienced, he was a killer. And they went out there, and their hands were flying and tore them apart. And I mean, that was just really cool to me. And that's what Clarissa reminded me of. Obviously, the men's team, did not fare as well. What I think is going to be needed in the next 4 years is going to be a major overhaul with the way the Olympics are done. Obviously, we're going back to the paper and pencil scoring that was outlawed after the debacle of '88. So that's a move in a positive direction. It's not going to be fencing with gloves anymore. It's going to be more, professional-based. And you have a lot of these fighters that have trained in a professional style for so many years, they're not on a dime going to have to change their style. But what I think needs to be done is the first step would be selecting the team earlier. I mean, the gentlemen that fought on this, the gentlemen and the ladies, I should say, that fought in 2012, most of them, the team wasn't set until a few months before the competition. And that was not enough time to really work with your coaching staff to, really implement the style that you're going to need. I think the team really needs to get together months in advance. I don't know the coach very well. I don't know by the name of Abdullah Bashir. I believe he was the Army coach before he stepped into this role. I don't know him very well. I've never spoken to him.
Well, neither do the fighters, because they only have like a month to get used to him.
Right. Yeah, the fighters only have a month, and Alex, and I don't know much about the coach, the coach's team, Abdullah Bashir, his name is. But what I think you need to do is get the fighters, get your team settled a long time in advance, at least 6 months in advance, and give them time to really, you know, work on this. And also, going back to a more professional style, I think that will be more of a benefit, you know, to your fighters, because a lot of these guys, you know, grew up in, you know, these gyms. And I'm going to use myself as an example here. A lot of my training was in a South Philadelphia gym that really emphasized on professional style of fighting. And the fact, and they developed a style for me, which was what we called aggressive counterpunching, where I pressed the action and I tried to force my opponent to throw the punches that I would counter off of. Now, when it got up to the collegiate level, sometimes that wasn't the perfect style because they really, in the college boxing, really didn't put a whole lot of scoring emphasis on body punches. I was a tremendous body puncher. And I wasn't a tap, tap, tap fighter. I was a thudding fighter. You know, I would throw hard shots. So there would be times I might take two or three soft shots and counter with a hard shot and might not get the credit deserved. But I was trained in a professional style of fighting. And I remember even Dr. Cox, I was still in school. I had about a month left. I think it was 98. And Dr. Cox went down to the Blue Horizon in Philadelphia because Antonio Tarver and Fernando Vargas, both guys that were on the 96 team that he was one of the assistant managers for, they were fighting there professionally. And as Dr. Cox and his wife were there, my dad was helping one of our guys in the gym in the corner that night. So he was talking to Doc, and Doc saying, man, he goes, you know what, Shane, that I didn't have a chance to fight in that ring, you know, with that type of stuff. That would benefit me so much, you know, fighting inside, in close, with, you know, the good body punching in there, and it was just so much better suited for me. Olympics are the same thing. And I think a lot of these guys now, in 2016, that are going to be able to fight in a very professional-based style with a better, more accurate type of scoring, I think, and I'm knocking on wood here, in 4 years you're going to see a U.S. Olympic turnaround. And you maybe not the glory days of 76 and 84, but definitely not the the drought of 2008 and 2012.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting too. The news that the International Olympic Committee or International Boxing Association there—I forget who it was. I think it was the IBA or the AIBA, something like that. They kicked out Bob Papa and Teddy Atlas. I don't know if you heard this, Tom.
Really? But, no, I didn't.
They threw him out of the arena because they were too disturbing, was their words.
Really?
And I know that I did watch a lot of the boxing at the tail end of the Olympics, and I could see their frustrations in the scoring. And I mean, there was a couple fights that I was watching. I forget the names offhand, but guys that clearly were winning the fights got screwed on the decisions, and a couple of them were tie decisions. Which never should have been a tie, and then the tiebreaker goes to the guy that didn't really win.
Right.
So they were pissed about that, and then I remember one specific segment where Teddy Atlas got on there, and he said, you know, they should do a house cleaning over at USA Boxing. Everybody should be fired.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure that ticked off a few people, and then
International
Boxing Association said, screw, you know, get out of the arena. You can do your commentating elsewhere.
You want to hear something really interesting that I read in one of my latest Ring magazines? The one I got maybe about a month or two ago, they were talking about, you know, the upcoming Olympics and how the scoring, you know, came to pass. And they talked about the Roy Jones fight of 1988. And they talked about how three of the five judges sided with the South Korean fighter. And how two of those five judges
had really been wined and dined by the South Koreans, which was kind of, you know, kind of bought them off a little bit. Then the third and deciding judge that ended up voting for the South Korean, he was an Italian judge. And they asked him, you know, well, two of the judges had overwhelming for Jones, two of the judges had it barely for the South Korean, and the Italian judge had it even on point, which is still a debacle enough as it is, but he circled the South Korean, figuring that all four judges would have voted for Jones. He said Jones clearly won the fight, but he circled the South Korean, so he didn't lose a unanimous decision in his home country, which is horribly ridiculous for ever, you know, voting for somebody. But that was the excuse that he gave.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
That is hard to even respond to. That is almost impossible to give any kind of comment about. Why was this guy there? I mean, I guess we'll never stop talking about 1988, you know, but it's so symptomatic of this, and maybe the fact that there's all this outroar about changing the style and going back, you know, a more professional style, well, why not? What's the whole end game of where we're going here with this? So I hope you're right, Tony. I sincerely hope you're right. And I agree with you. I don't think we'll see those glory days, but anything but this. Or just, I think Teddy Atlas may have said, let's just shut the whole thing down. Let's just forget about it. Just abolish the whole thing as far as the Olympic boxing, get rid of it. So when it comes to that stage, and when the hardcore fans like us are even turned off by it, hopefully we'll see some changes.
I watched one Olympic bout I just was lucky enough to turn on the Olympics, and they had a boxing match on. And I know it was a Great Britain fighter, and I cannot remember who he was fighting or where they were from. And they were bigger guys. It was either like 165 or maybe 178. I don't remember offhand. And when the fight was over, the Great Britain fighter won. And it was close. And I even on the cards, it was so close that it was like on those point system they had, it was something like 18-18, and then they had to go to their tiebreakers, which was like all five judges, like how many times they pressed the button, and it was still even pretty close with that. But I remember Teddy Atlas saying after the Great Britain fighter won that he goes, well, I don't really agree with that decision, and he goes, but this isn't the first time I've disagreed with a decision this year. And this was only on the second or third day.
Yeah. He was pretty hyped up.
Yeah, I know he was. But like I said, when they go back to the paper scoring, Kelly was always going to be the speaker, especially from 1988, that you're going to have, highest. So whether it's saying, okay, you know, does anybody know where the 2016 Olympics are?
Rio. In Brazil. Rio de Janeiro.
Okay, Brazil.
Yes.
Okay.
Rio de Janeiro, Brazil.
And, I mean, I don't know, I know there's some Brazilian professional fighters like Ancelino Freitas and among others. I don't know much about their amateurs. Then again, in 1988, I don't know much about the South Korean amateurs either. But, you know, there could be a fear. Okay, we get to the Olympics. Now you have, you know, corrupt judges. You know, that maybe not signed by the Brazilian officials, but swing fighters. You're always going to have that fear. But then on the same lines, with these stupid click, and tap systems, as I like to call them, it's okay. You're a British, you know, judge, and you're judging a fight, and there happens to be a British fighter in it, and he gets hit with a shot right on the chops. You know, it's a clean, strong punch. The other guy landed. You might just delay a half a second or two to click that little button, and it doesn't register in the same time as the other judges may have clicked it, then that guy doesn't get a point. So, yeah, there still can be some, you know, bias and manipulating, you know, no matter what. The only way,
for that click and tap system to ever work is if you had a complete computerized system, almost that it was, you know, put into the gloves.
Right. They actually have something like that. HBO
developed
it. But it's for
it would still suck. It would still make it fencing with gloves. So fuck it. Throw it all out. Go to the paper and pencil system. And encourage guys. Last year, remember when we interviewed Merciless Ray Mercer?
Yeah.
And then the first thing I asked him was about being a gold medalist on the 88 Olympic team and what it was like to be there from the Roy Jones debacle. And he goes, yeah, I made sure to take all of my fights out of the judge's hands. He goes, I scored every fight by knockout. And he goes, they weren't taking the gold medal away from me. And I said, right. I said, and that's a great point. And that's a great strategy to have. I said, but it would work in these Olympics today because these guys are not trained to fight. They're trained to, you know, tap and score and fence and hold and run. You know, they're not trained to fence. And two fighters that were both gold medalists that I think really would struggle in with today's Olympic head scoring, one of them being Ray Mercer, because Ray was, he was a very physical fighter. He was very strong, very good jab, and his jab, would have helped him out immensely because that's a quick scoring punch, but it, for him, was also harder than most guys' right hands.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned Ray because there was a little bit of news last week that I didn't get to. That he's going to
fight by Holyfield down in South Africa?
Field. Yes, in South Africa.
Yeah, an exhibition, right? But you know those two.
I think it's a real fight. I don't think it's an exhibition.
Oh, absolutely. Because you know those two are going to bring it to each other. They're both very proud, tough men.
Right.
You know? Well, yeah, like I was saying, I said, Ray Mercer may have had, because he was a very much a plodding type fighter that liked to wear you down with aggressiveness and behind his jab, but he wasn't a rat-a-tat-tat combination guy. He was a very physical, very heavy-handed fighter. Another fighter that was an Olympic gold medalist for the United States that really would struggle in the tap and clinch systems. Smoking Joe Frazier. Joe Frazier was an Olympian in 1964 because it was a very professional style at that time, and he went out there and fought and he was bobbing and weaving and firing that big left hook. Never would work, you know, with these guys jabbing and running. It took him a few rounds to figure Ali out.
And don't forget George Foreman in 1968.
Well, George, I think, would have had a better chance because George won his fight primarily with his, you know, he was a bigger guy and he had long reach. And
yeah,
he was
able
to win that repeatedly. I mean, I remember his watching and reading about his gold medal fight against a Russian fighter, and they just kept telling him, whatever you do, just whatever he does, throw your jab. And he was just throwing that jab that was just like, I mean, basically getting hit by a telephone pole hitting you in the face.
Yeah.
I think George would have a little bit better success than maybe Joe would have because of his height, his reach, and that jab, where Joe never used a jab. He just primarily beat the body and threw left hooks to the head.
Yeah, the other story that came out of the Olympics, before we kill this topic, I wanted to mention this. The Azerbaijani claim by the BBC that the Azerbaijan team was put up a bribe of $9 million to the International Boxing Association. There's a big BBC story on that. And the International Boxing Association actually sued the BBC over that, so it's going to be an interesting case to follow on that front. That's a pretty big accusation to make, and a lot of other news organizations ran with it. But as we know from the phone hacking scandal over there in the UK, so some of the tactics over there are pretty sketchy with news reporting. So you kind of got to take a lot of that stuff with a grain of salt. But it sounded to me like there's a lot of evidence that they had, and it's going to be interesting to see if they win that case or not, or the BBC just settles just because they don't want to deal with it. But it's definitely not a good year for Olympic boxing. It's really the only sport that had any major scandal here in these Olympics. You know, people got sent home and that sort of thing, but those are individuals. And then the officials got sent home in this sport. So hopefully they do improve things and fix it and figure it out, because it's definitely not a good PR move on their parts to screw it up that badly this time.
Yeah.
But they at least are taking suggestions and deciding that, you know, enough is enough, and they're going to change the way things are done. Let's move on. We got we don't have the music queued up, but I'd like to get a TNT segment in this week. And you guys, I sent you a message about last week. We were going to talk about performance-enhancing drugs, and it's kind of a perfect time to talk about that because getting to another news item, Chael Sonnen decided to move up to light heavyweight, and he's going to be facing Forrest Griffin in the first match, I think, ever in league history, where two TRT users are going to fight each other in December. So it's an interesting time to talk about this argument, and we're going to just kind of discuss which sport do you think has a bigger problem with it, and then how do the sports deal with that issue. And we actually just had, in boxing, Peterson. Peterson just got one of his belts back. So
yeah, they cleared him. I was kind of surprised, but...
And if you want to start on that front, Tony, go for it. What's your point of view on this?
Well, with performance-enhancing drugs in the sport of boxing, they have a lot. I mean, just like baseball anymore, they really have, ever since with the scandals with Roger Clemens and Mark McGwire back from, a couple years ago, lingering on right now, as far as guys as Alex Rodriguez. Now, I mean, baseball has been suspending guys if they use any type of, like, diuretic or something, you know, that's like a weight loss supplement. I think with performance-enhancing drugs in boxing as well as mixed martial arts is a little bit stickier of a subject because it's like you can use a certain type of steroid that, could make you, it could physically make you more powerful. It could make you stronger. So you could possibly hit harder. Could up your endurance. Things like that. But also, you can use a performance-enhancing drug, which is assisting in weight loss. Which in sports, where you're in weight classes, that could be an unfair advantage, to your opponent. You say you have two guys, they're fighting at middleweight. And one fighter, he's growing up, he's getting bigger, he's getting heavier, he's physically maturing, and he could be, say, using some type of weight loss supplement that's helping, keep his body weight lower, that is giving him an unfair advantage over an opponent that, is, making the weight a more natural way and maybe is weakening himself. So, with a sport like boxing and mixed martial arts, which has weight classes, I'm just trying to think of the best way to verbalize it. You really have to have, like, categories of how these drugs are enhancing your performance. Are they helping you get to a lower weight class? Are they helping you run faster, stronger, hit harder, better endurance? And in a certain sport like boxing and mixed martial arts, when you are actively trying to knock out your opponent, yes, they really need to have, restrictions, limits, and punishments for any performance-enhancing drug because of the fact that, you're potentially risking your opponent's life in there. A baseball player that uses a supplement that helps them lose weight, I really don't see how that, should warrant a suspension, to be totally honest. I could see, Mark McGwire shooting some Balco or, Jose Canseco using a Balco product, which helps them go from 40 home runs to 65 home runs in a season and, launching them into the upper deck
Yeah, that's a situation, because that's illegally enhancing their performance. But something that's making them, you know, as a weight loss supplement, I don't really see that as a big deal. In boxing and mixed martial arts, I do, because, like I said, once again, it gives you an advantage over your opponent and, you know, puts them physically in jeopardy.
All right, Tom, your turn.
Well, you know, in research I was doing on this, it brought back a lot of memories going back to even back to the 80s when I was in California, and I became friends with a gentleman named Dan Duchesne. Now, he passed away in the year 2000, and he was known as the steroid guru, and he had advised a lot of high-level bodybuilders in this, but he had a book, The Underground Steroid Handbook, and so I dug out my old copy of that, and he had such an interesting point in there that, are the risks of steroids exaggerated? I mean, I don't want to get too far off topic here, but I got to get this out. Like he was saying in there that if you have a bottle of Valium, a bottle of aspirin, a bottle of Lasix, and a bottle of Dianabol, everyone's favorite oral from the 70s and 80s, there's only one of those bottles you could take and probably not have to be rushed to the hospital to save your life, and that would be the Dianabol. And I got to thinking, I said, you know, he's got an interesting point about that. And, I mean, I don't want to get on this libertarian thing here, but then it led me to a whole another thing about the level playing field. Well, do we ever really have a level playing field? I mean, there are some people with more genetic advantages, some people with better coaching, some people maybe with better equipment. I mean, there's like, for example, altitude training. Does that give someone an advantage? Maybe everyone can't go to Big Bear or a hypoxic air machine. But the point is, as far as actual benefit, and I was even comparing the sports, and in boxing, as far as, of course, you know, strength is important, endurance, we all know this, but the hand-eye coordination and the reflexes, the effect of steroids on there, I don't know. I don't know if that would be the benefit that maybe they would be in MMA. So I was doing some more research, and there was one trainer that swore that steroids would make a fighter more susceptible to knockout. And I even have the quote here that steroids cause an increase in blood flow and blood pressure while reducing the body's ability to clot blood. This equates to a fighter that is less able to go the distance and more vulnerable to knockout. And then he added that, probably, let's see, every athlete's unique. Okay, but, yeah, so I think there's no question that they're going to work, but as far as the advantage in boxing, I don't know if it would be quite what it would be in MMA. I don't know. I mean, I'm open to change on that, but... then I guess, of course, the whole purpose of this is what can be done about it besides what's being done now. Well, I think we're having the testing now, so.
So I just did an article not too long ago about random drug testing, which they did to Alistair Overeem because he missed the test, but they don't do to anybody else. And my point on the article was that I think in the UFC at least, it would hurt them in a big way if it turned out there's a huge epidemic that they only catch because they do random testing. Now, if there's not that much widespread use, I guess random drug testing would be feasible for them. But this whole idea that Dana White's saying that it would be cost prohibitive and I don't want to be calling guys like I do now to just make them show up at press conferences. He's alluding to Nick Diaz there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's thinking it's going to add a bunch of new headaches for him, because he's going to have to call people about their tests and stuff. But that's the point. Random drug testing, you don't call people. You just test them. So I don't see why they're really not moving forward on that. I know he said that he wants to get these guys in the lab and test them. I heard that in an interview. So I think they should look further into it, and they should do it and just stop talking about it and kill that epidemic.
What about the State Athletic Commission? Wouldn't that be the Athletic Commission's job rather than the UFC?
Right. But the UFC, I mean, they've kind of laid the foundation for the whole sport and over the years. So if they want to do something, then the athletic commission is going to go along. It's almost guaranteed. And, you know, the only thing that I could think of that would stop it would be some kind of legal issue. You know, like the fighters would protest for some reason, like a players union in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it can be done. I just read that a league in Canada is doing it, Maximum Fighting Championship. So they're working with their commission, and then they've got that system done for random drug testing. So why not in the UFC? And the particular problem with this testosterone replacement therapy that's so hot now, and I don't necessarily disagree with the use of that as long as it's responsible, but guys are just using it like ovaries. You know, their levels are like 4 or 5 times what they should be, and they're getting an advantage in training. And a lot of guys are using it to not only train, but to overcome injury faster. And I mean, I kind of feel for them because, hey, you know, you're in a tough sport, and that sport is based on exciting performances. But it's actually, there's a lot of science behind it, and it's this conflicting issue. I mean, I'd like to say one way or another whether I'm for or against it, but I don't even know sometimes when I look at the issue. I just feel like it's a big advantage for some of these guys, and that's unfair. But at the same time, I see that there's, you know, a lot of science, and people do lose their testosterone after a certain age. So it's a tough call, but you really should make sure, if you're in this kind of sport, that everybody's on a level playing field. So if you're going to use it, you still have to have the right levels in your system. So that's why I think that random testing would work, to kind of weed out the abuse of that sort of stuff. And boxing is getting caught up in it, too. I mean, it's not so much, because I think in MMA, it's just it's a different story altogether. These guys are just using different type of drugs. They're using them in different ways. I know that Lamont Peterson obviously had some issues with testosterone, but turned out, by one review at least, that he was using them responsibly. So,
mm-hmm. Who knows? Yeah, and I was still thinking boxing, that, like I say, I could see it giving an edge, but a good boxer with good reflexes, good hand speed, perhaps it could be negated a little more. I mean, I'm not even sure how to articulate this, what's going through my head with it. But, you know, it's when you're on the ground, when there's a lot more strength involved, yeah, maybe there'd be more of an advantage in MMA. But I still think that a good, slick boxer could shut down a more powerful approach. We've seen that quite often. And also, as far as the endurance steroid, Winstrol, now, I've never taken that, so I can't speak from experience, but some people say that they can't even run a mile without the blood cells just getting into such a pump that it actually constricts it. So as far as endurance, I think that the jury's out on that, and I'm no expert on this, and I just really didn't have the time to put the research into it, and a lot of my stuff's very outdated. I mean, I'm sure that the game changes all the time, but I don't know. Strength and size, aggression, recuperation, yeah, I don't think that's disputable. But
Well, it was kind of an interesting point that you made about the dangerousness of these different types of drugs, and obviously it depends on which one you're using, but a lot of these experts out there are saying that the only reason anybody needs to use TRT in the first place is because they've abused other steroids in the past. And that's kind of been thrown out there. It's just not really a whole lot of proof. There's not, like, you know, any kind of mainstream studies to back that stuff up. But, you know, people are always going to say steroids are bad. It's just, you know, it's just one of those things. It's a given.
Well, I do believe it's a medical fact that with each, that as you get older, I mean, I think that an 80-year-old has a fraction of the testosterone that he had when he was 30. Now, we don't see 80-year-old fighters, but the point is that as guys get older, the testosterone does leave. as you guys will see, one of these decades, you know, it is
decreased.
We're
in the range where we start to lose 1-3%, according to the commercials, every year.
Okay, yeah.
Ageless male. That's one thing that stuck out, seeing all those commercials. They really do try to convince you that everybody needs it. I don't know. That's a tough one. Anyway, we're going to add a little bit of a female perspective. Hella Holly over here is chomping at the bit. She wants to get on the show and talk about this stuff. So we're going to connect her. Tom, you haven't had the chance to chat with her yet, but we've had her on the show for, at least a year. We had her on at the very beginning of our show. We first started it years ago.
Yeah, she was the co-host before I was.
Right.
Ah, okay.
And she knows her MMA. She's rarely into the boxing conversation, but she knows both sports okay, and MMA she's a big fan of. And she was a little ticked off that we were talking about Forrest Griffin, because she really likes him.
I remember that.
So we'll get her on to talk about him. My Skype will work correctly. But while we're waiting for that, I did want to mention there's another big story this week in MMA. We talked about this in a previous TNT episode about the safety of the two sports. And this is actually the second time in South Carolina we had a death in an MMA fight. And it was about an hour after the fight, Tyrone Mims fought a guy actually from the little military school connection. They were doing a reality show on these guys from Georgia, and Tyrone Mims was one of these guys from Georgia. It was an amateur fight. It was in his amateur debut. And should probably want to talk about this too. But, kid died, and the autopsy was...
telephone number you have dialed is temporarily not in service.
Gave me the wrong
number. El número de teléfono que usted ha marcado temporalmente no está en servicio.
She's listening too, I think. So maybe she'll send me the new number. But anyway, yeah, Tyrone Mims, tragic. He had five kids. His wife and his mother were in the stands, and it was his first fight. And ironically, Michael Kirkham, it was in 2007. He was the first death in South Carolina since they've regulated sport there. And, you know, for two guys to die in one state, that's big, big stuff. And, you know, it's added a lot of frustration to people over there, because they do a lot of testing, and nothing came up on the tests for Mims. So there was really no reason that was, any glaring reason for this to happen, why it happened. He was actually winning the first round, and then he came out in the second round and he stopped defending himself. And he actually got up when they first attended to him and walked away and said, "I'm fine." And then he just started kind of going in and out of consciousness later on. They took him to the hospital and he died at the hospital. And of the seven total deaths in MMA, from the Wikipedia page that I looked at, that was, they're all, the two ones, that I think there's two or three from sanctioned events, and all the ones from sanctioned events have been from cerebral hemorrhage. So that tells you something. And we actually have talked about, there's been studies done that's shown that in MMA there's actually more concussions per capita per fight than you see in boxing. In boxing, it seems to be more long-term injuries like pugilistic dementia and that sort of thing, where you don't see as much of that in MMA. But still, it's such a young sport, you don't know if we're going to see that eventually.
My gut feeling about the Mims situation that... And I haven't followed up on it, but a lot of times you find a genetic component there, that there was just something, almost a congenital defect that came out under the hard stress of a fight. I mean, I don't know what the autopsy, if the autopsy confirmed anything like that, but we've seen that. Where we've seen that more in boxing is at the lower levels, especially the tough man levels. You know, you'll see some people there that, you know, really have no business being in there. And I've seen that happen. Like we had a situation when I was fighting out in Pomona, out in California. And in fact, it got the whole thing shut down. And again, the guy left the ring. He was okay. He was really overmatched and did pretty good, almost exactly like this. And in fact, he didn't zap.
I was going to say, to further your point, the last guy to die after an MMA event wasn't sanctioned, but he was found to have some kind of defect, like you said. He had some kind of issue a week before the fight that maybe he sustained in sparring or something, but it was definitely not the fight itself that did it to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's kind of my feeling here with this. I mean, I don't know this, but that's my gut.
Right. And there is a way to donate to Mim's family there. He's got five young children, so it's definitely a concern there how their family is going to be taken care of. And right now, I guess they're only setting it up for funeral expenses, but if you go to the Georgia Boys Grits and Glory website, which you can easily find through Google, and on YouTube too, there's videos of these guys. It's like a reality show. There's clips on YouTube. I'm not sure if it's on any kind of network TV or anything, but it's definitely a concern as far as helping out his family. So you can go to their website and there's a picture of him there where you can click on and donate. But, another story we were talking about earlier, the IBF ruled in favor of Lamont Peterson, and they allowed him to keep their light welterweight title. And from their statement, here's a quote: after concluding the review of all the documentation provided by Peterson's camp and the Nevada State Athletic Commission, Tony back on the phone and waiting for Tom. I don't know why we got disconnected there. Okay, we got Tony back. So
yeah.
For Tom. I was just in the middle of saying that we lost Michael Doakes this last week, late Saturday night. He died of cancer. Doesn't say what type of cancer, but Michael Dynamite Doakes was 54 years old. Turned 54 on Friday. Liver cancer.
Okay. Just like Joe Frazier. Michael Doakes had, obviously a lot of problems in his life. Tremendously talented fighter, fast hands, good punch, very slick boxer. And unfortunately, he fell in that time during the early to mid-80s when a lot of the guys were... there was a lot of other champions. There was Larry Holmes, and then, like, the WBA title was being passed around from guys like Michael Doakes, Jerry Cotillia, Tim Witherspoon, Bone Crusher Smith. So Mike Tyson came around and cleared everything up. Michael Doakes is a tremendous talent. I remember his fight most with Evander Holyfield. He gave Holyfield hell before getting stopped in 10 rounds. He was also the recipient of a very brutal knockout against Razor Ruddock when Ruddock first on the scene. And then his last chance at a world title, he got knocked out in one round by Riddick Bowe. His career shouldn't be measured by all of that. He was a tremendously talented fighter. Unfortunately, he often fell victim to demons outside the ring. Drugs, cocaine trafficking. He actually spent the good part of his later years in prison.
And Tom mentioned you were going to try to get to his funeral.
Right. That's, as you know, we share the same hometown. And with that Coach Sia fight, I mean, I look back on, first off, what he achieved coming up and everything else. I mean, one man in a million is talented to get to the level he did. But training for that Coach Sia fight, and when you look back on Styles, that was a winnable fight for Dokes. The problem was, I was talking to one of the, you know, just based on Styles alone, I mean, had Dokes been in the shape he needed to be physically, mentally, and everything else, I think that was a stylistic hard time for Coach Sia. Coach Sia, if guys remember him, he had that giant right hand, all the rumors about the bionic right hand where he had to have the bones. You remember that, like when he fought Leon Spinks and won that as a first-round KO, and then it was the bionic right hand. But the point is, I think it was a winnable fight for Dokes, but when I was writing for Pro Boxing Update, I got to know some people very close to it, and it turns out that this isn't really inside information. It was in some articles here in the local papers that even during training, he was, by 83, he was really deep into a cocaine problem, severe cocaine problem. And I guess even in the gym. I mean, I'm just kind of scratching my head saying, how far gone do you have to be? I mean, you shouldn't be doing any of that between fights. You know? And and I think that sums up a lot of it. And then I think from then on it was... you know, just downhill, just an awful waste of talent. I think that he really would have had some good fights left in him. I always wanted to see him and Greg Page. I think that may have been interesting, but we'll never know now. So Saturday morning is the service, and so I hope to have a full report next week, on-site report for you guys.
All right. He actually is the World Boxing Association heavyweight champion. He won by defeating Michael Weaver in 1982, and he lost to Jerry Cody in September 1983. And it says here, in 1986, he was arrested in Vegas for cocaine trafficking, 2 years probation. And then in 2000, he was sentenced to 10 years in prison. After pleading guilty in 1999 to attempted murder, second-degree kidnapping, and intent to commit sexual assault in a 1998 incident involving his girlfriend. And he was paroled in 2008. His final record was 53 wins, 6 losses, and 2 draws. And he came back to live in Akron a few years ago after he was paroled.
Yes, and he was in very bad health the past few years because in... one of my other businesses, one of my clients was the barmaid at the place he hung out at. And she said at one point he had ballooned up to over 300 pounds. And I guess there's a diabetes situation, the liver, just it seems like when one thing went wrong, so many other things did. And it was just awful, awful ending. So...
That's the loss for boxing. I don't know how much he was out there being an ambassador, but my condolences to his family either way. I guess he was a big-time family man. He was loyal to his family. Let's see what all the news we got here. Actually, had Tommy Montoya scheduled to come on at 9:30. Looks like Holly's phone is shit the bed. So, might not be able to get her on tonight, but we will get her guest on as long as his phone is working. We had, not too long ago, we talked about Danny O'Connor fighting over at Foxborough at the New England Patriots Gillette Stadium. Well, he displaced Eddie Soto with a 4th-round TKO in the main event there. And it was a success, I guess. He went to 18-1. And just a minute into the 4th round, he won the fight. And I guess it was pretty good for him to be so close to home. And his quote was, what I'm doing is definitely going to open some doors for youth who have a dream and want to follow it, and brings the sport back to the, and it brings the sport back to the city. And also a guy from my hometown, Dorchester, native of Dorchester, Billy Traft, gave his fans a good show. He's a 33-year-old member of the Boston Police Department. Like I said, when we previewed this, he fought on the Battle of the Badges card in the amateur bout against a guy that he had previously faced in Golden Gloves. And he won that fight, too. Got fight of the night for that one. But he actually defeated a guest of ours from the MMA world, Dan Bunnell. He retired on his chair in between the first and second round in that super middleweight fight here. But Dan Bunnell interviewed back when we were on MySpace page.
Oh, wow.
And I got his name from a guy who actually was handicapped. He was one of the first guys to, not one of the first, but one of the only guys to try to get wheelchair MMA approved. And he's just one of those guys that was able to keep training people while he was in a wheelchair. He was in a car accident, but he had been in the martial arts since he was a kid. So he had a nice little bunch of guys that he was working with. Had to set up a gym in his basement for these guys to work out in. Dan Bunnell was one of his recruits. So I guess he switched over to boxing for this fight. And also Antonio Chavez Fernandez out of Brockton defeated Springfield welterweight Noel Garcia by unanimous decision in the first fight on the card. So there's definitely big time local flair there in Foxborough. And we talked a little bit about John Jones' deal with Nike. Well, it turns out there's a WWE wrestler who took exception to it, CM Punk. He's a big time fan of MMA. He actually trains jiu-jitsu.
Something about that.
And I guess he was on his Twitter, and he decided to take a shot at him. And he wrote, let's reward more drunk drivers with endorsement deals. And he added the hashtag responsibility to it. And he was obviously alluding to Jones' arrest in May for drunk driving after crashing his car into a utility pole. Had two female passengers in the car, none of which was his wife. I think at least one of them was connected to a strip joint. So obviously it was multiple things going on there. So, yeah, there's a lot of people kind of still on him for that. And Dana White kind of immediately came to his defense saying, you know, the kid's young, he just got a hold of all this money and fame, and you never know how people are going to react to that. Obviously, Jones had to go to court, face the judge on this one, and he ended up getting kind of a harsh sentence for a first major offense. He actually has to do a bunch of community service. He's on probation for a while, and he's got a six-month suspended license. So he's definitely, you know, feeling the pinch from this, and he's going to change his ways, I'm sure. He actually has to have ignition locks put on his car. I guess it must be one of those systems where you have to blow into, like, a breathalyzer just before you get out of your car.
Yeah. I know someone that had to do that.
So, you know, he has to think about what he did every day, I'm sure, every time he steps into one of his cars. So that ought to change his ways a little bit. But I guess CM Punk is not such a punk in his ordinary lifestyle. He's known as a straight-edge guy. Doesn't do any drugs or alcohol. Which is kind of surprising. You know, when you go around calling yourself CM Punk, you probably should be a little bit of a punk.
I remember they did a gimmick about a year or so ago. He was a heel at the time, a.k.a. for a lot of armchair fans. I mean, he's a bad guy. And he got one guy to join his straight-edge society and he just shaved his head. Then he got a female wrestler to join his straight-edge society and shaved her head, too.
You see, they're trying to do a play on straight-edge of a razor, huh?
Yeah, I guess.
Oh, yeah, that was one of those interesting stories. And, of course, Knight doesn't have a history of throwing people out for any kind of minor infractions like that, although a lot of people would say it's pretty major. You know, drunk somebody. But it's Tiger Woods, so. You know, that says something about the brand. Of course, that's we talked earlier about how Dana White talked about shutting down. They shut down the Manny Pacquiao line, but it's a complete lie. Not true at all. I'm trying to connect. Isn't it? Anyway, the Nike deal for Jones, we have heard a little bit of some details there. He's going to have his own line of shoes and other clothing items, and he'll be featured in major marketing efforts from the company. And I think the last fight he wore, UFC only, in a weird deal that they did, a one-time only thing. And now they're actually, they have to have like a gatekeeper fee paid for any fighter to be sponsored by a major company these days. So they actually have to work in conjunction with a fighter in a situation like this to make this type of deal so that they can figure out what Nike pays the UFC and what Nike pays the fighter. And, of course, the UFC is a private company, so we may never find out what they got paid for. And I haven't heard a thing about what Jones is getting paid, and that's kind of weird because usually the fighters will want to go out and say what they're getting paid. But I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think that there was another deal that he did with another shoe company when he first started winning his major fight, K-Swiss or something. I don't know. I mean, it's probably the wrong company, but I thought he did like a $1 million deal with them. Maybe that expired. Maybe it's a one-year deal or something. But I'm sure the price, either way. So he's probably a millionaire at this point, just from this contract only, and whatever else he's got going on. But he's the first MMA fighter to sign a global endorsement deal with Nike. Anderson Silva also has a Nike contract, but it's specific to Brazil. So there you have it. Now, do we have any big boxing matchups coming up this weekend, Tony, that you know of?
Take a look on that. If I could, you guys want a good little piece of humor for tonight, I invite you to go to my YouTube page, youtube.com/TornadoTP. If you go on there, obviously, Rich, I know you've been on there in the past. I have some of my old fight videos on there from way, way, way back in the day. You know, just after the time they got rid of using, we started using gloves back then. That's how old I am. just kidding. But I did a video today with a very good friend of mine, Joey. I've known him since we were 7 years old. He's a few months younger than me, about 10 months, I guess. And he asked me to start training him. He's a huge mixed martial arts fan, loves UFC, you know, diehard. He has tap out all over his truck and shirts and hats. Loves it, and he never really got the sport of boxing, but he wants to get back in shape, and he didn't really want to go to like a gym. He wanted some personal training, so he came to me. He started with me about 3 weeks ago, and our one point of discussion was you're right-handed, you will fight in a right-handed stance, but I like fighting southpaw. I said, make your left arm useless if you don't know how to really step in with it, and I said, let me train you conventional. I don't want to train conventional. Well, you don't have a choice. So I started training him. I'm getting him on the steps a little bit and the balance and the timing. But he's now starting to at least swivel his hips and throw some punches. He's never going to compete, but he wants to get in better shape for his cousin's wedding, which I'm also in a few months. So today I had him come over, a very abbreviated workout, gloved up, give me 2 rounds in the bag to warm up. He warms up and he's feeling okay. I said, "What's the camera for? You're getting video." Right. What do you mean I'm getting video? What do I mean? You're getting video so we can track your progress. So if you go to youtube.com/tornadoTP, the newest video I have on there is Joey.
All right, so we're back. Tony, what were you saying about your video? Where can people find it?
YouTube.com/TornadoTP. And it's the second round tonight. I had Joey do two rounds on the bag. Then he was doing three rounds with me on the myth. And I'm really trying to push him hard. He is not natural, and he doesn't, you know, have very good balance, but you know, we're working them pretty good, and he's improving. And so tonight at one point, like, I said something to him, and he looked directly at the camera. I said, "Don't look at my camera." So there's some humor in it, because, you know, I know I'm training the guy that's, you know, never really going to go anywhere with it. He's doing it more for fun and, you know, to get in shape, and, you know, if anything ever happens or he needs to throw his fans, because we always have a rule when the group of us go out, that if a fight ever breaks out, it's the youngest of the group that's got to take care of, you know, all the issues. Well, Joey never goes out with us. He doesn't drink, you know, he doesn't do anything. And I'm usually the youngest, so it usually falls in my lap, which, thankfully, there's never a problem. But during this bachelor party, Joey's going to be the youngest guy, and it's, yo, there's an issue, Joey, it's all on you. And don't fuck it up, because then it's got to fall to me.
Well, I think we got a hell of Holly here. Do we? Can you hear us? Is that Tom?
That's me. Yeah,
that's
Tony, I was just admiring your basement gym.
You like that?
I was just admiring your basement gym. I found you on YouTube.
Yeah.
You
have a pretty good gym, you know, down there. I mean, now, directly behind where I have the camera set up is where I have my heavy bag. In fact, if you scroll down to more of my videos, a lot of them are just like my dog, you know, jumping in the pool and goofing off. But I have a video where I do a hand wrap tutorial, and then I have a video where I do a demonstration on the heavy bag. And then if you scroll way to the bottom, you'll find some of my old fights from the college days.
All right. Well, now we finally have Hella Holly. With only 5 minutes left in the show, we finally got her on. We're going to have to reschedule with Tommy Montoya, it looks like. But how's it going, Holly?
Oh, it's going great. Just had to get a phone that works.
Yeah, we're no stranger to technical difficulties over here.
We get
two or three disconnects a week these days because of Skype. I connected Skype to Facebook. The rest is history. But we got a big Strike Force card we haven't even talked about yet. Ronda Rousey versus Sarah Kaufman. What do you think about that fight? And Miesha Tate versus Julie Kidd is on the same card. We had Miesha Tate on a few weeks ago.
You know, honestly, for Strike, I don't have Showtime, so I'm not as familiar with Strike Force. But that particular fight, I'm pretty familiar with. I think Ronda Rousey, she just likes to fight. I mean, you can look at her pictures. She just likes to fight. The other girl has way more experience Ronda Rousey likes to fight. I think she's going to win.
Yeah, Dana White's talking her up like she's going to be the first girl in the UFC, so we'll see.
Well, I'd like to see that because, first of all, I'd like to see any girl being in the UFC because Dana White's always been so adamant that there will never be female fighters in the UFC, and I'd like to see it happen. I'd like to see it with Ronda Rousey. She's just a genuine fighter. She loves it.
She knows how to work the press, too. She seems to always be in the news. She targeted, what's her name there, the Kardashian, Kim Kardashian,
oh, yeah.
And then, Michael Phelps for being kind of a loner. She's talking about him at the last Olympics. She's all by himself in the corner. There's our 90-second warning. So why don't you, with this time, if everybody wants to check out the Strike Force card, you can go to Sure Dog and look at the rest of that card. But why don't you tell us what you think of this Sonnen versus Griffin fight while we have you here, Holly?
Oh, my God, I'm so excited. You know I'm excited, Rich. You know Force Griffin is my secret boyfriend. You know. And I'm so excited about that fight. Because Sonnen is so weird. He's so out there. And Forrest Griffin, in his own way, is so weird and out there. This is going to be the most amazing fight.
Yeah, and I'm sure they're both going to be able to hype it up fine. But they actually are good friends, so that's kind of weird.
Right. Yeah, but, you know, it's all business. It's not like they're, you know, it's not, these fights are never personal. It's a sport, and they both know it, and it's not like they're on the same team or anything like that. So I don't think that there's going to be any issues with them being friends. But I think it's going to be a really good fight. They're both really, they can both be really aggressive. And, I mean,
right.
You saw, everyone knew that about Forrest Griffin whenever he fought, what's his name, from the Ultimate Fighter.
Stephen Bonner.
Yes, and that was just a brutal fight, and that's what people like to see with aggressive fighters, especially if they're going to be 205 or heavier because they're not as fast as like the little lightweights or whatever. So they want them to beat the crap out of each other, and that's what's going to happen.
All right.
I don't think
there's
going to be a whole lot of
time. The show has run out of time, so glad you're back, though. We will definitely get Tommy and you back on for next week. And,
I will have fun at work, I promise.
All right.
Okay, guys, enjoy the fights, as always.
All right.
See you later.
Have a good night.